tracks around Australia. Here's Inside Motorsport.
Good evening, I'm Craig Revell.
And I'm Colin Ford, and welcome to this week's edition of Inside Motorsport.
Coming up on this week's show, we find out what's happening over stateside when we catch up with the producer of Inside Track on WEGO in Charlotte, North Carolina.
Absolutely correct. It's weird when you have a sport that actually starts with biggest race of the year as the season opener, of course, the Daytona 500, the stock car Super Bowl of all motorsports, basically, I guess, only second behind that, the Indianapolis 500.
Cars of identical in specification to a Shell Series car. That's why they renamed them Konica Series cars, because at the end of the day, as you say, there's nothing right about them. They've got the same horsepower, same gearboxes, same diff ratios. Everything's identical. There's no difference. And next year, we're running a VT Commodore. There's going to be VT Commodores and AUs in the series.
That was Dale Breed talking about his moves into the V8 lights category. Mark Zonneveld's hoping to turn things around from last weekend's last BOC Gas's disappointment.
Absolutely, we had a bit of an oil problem and spun a bearing at Wakefield Park, so the engine will be brand new for Oran Park, so hopefully we'll be able to put in plenty of practice beforehand and have a better run up there.
And of course we catch up with all the news with Phil Brennigan.
Cromley question earlier in the season, there was discussions he had very closely with Prancing Horse about maybe doing something touring car racing or V8 supercar related in the future, and doing some Nations Cup in the interim, and he's landed on his feet. Of course, he has a history with Gibson Motorsport. He's very well regarded, has got an excellent public profile, and Craig Lowndes points out that look at his Bathurst record, he's a tremendous endurance driver, and that's what the team's looking for. So it's not a bad situation, is it, Colin? They've got the best sprint driver in the country and one of the best endurance drivers.
All that and more coming up on Inside Motorsport tonight. But first, stand by for news.
And, of course, the top news this week is the fact that there is now an Australian Formula One team. The future of the Minardi Formula One team has been saved by Australian businessman Paul Stoddart, who has bought the Italian outfit for an undisclosed figure. As we'll hear later on, the rumours are anywhere between $70 to $91 million. During the week, Paul Stoddart had these words to say about his purchase of the team.
Well, it goes back to my roots in Australia, I suppose. I did a bit of racing there myself in the late 70s, early 80s, and I've always had a passion for Formula One. But Formula One these days is not about passion as much as it is about business, and I hope that we've made the right choice, and I'm sure we have in combining the two. Our goal is a realistic one, and that is to continue in the top 10 constructors position this year, which I think we will achieve, and Minardi have managed to do that in recent years. Moving on beyond that, we're hoping obviously for an improved performance up to a midfield status in years 2, 3, 4 and beyond. At the moment we're in the final stages of concluding negotiations with one driver. Not at liberty to say who it is just yet, but it's a well-known name, and the second seat at this point is wide open.
Yeah, and Paul stood up there with news on his purchase of the Minardi Formula One team. The team will be known in the future as European Minardi Formula One, and that takes in the name of European Aviation Group, where Stoddart has made his fortune. The concept is that the team will operate with Italian and UK facilities in tandem, and he is not planning to relocate the team to England. At this point in time, the team will be running Ford V10 engines. The Ford Cosworth V10 has been running for a number of years, but will be rebranded as a European engine. He is also, as he mentioned, looking at his drivers. It was possible that he was going to take up Pedro De La Rosa, who had been dumped by Arrows during the week, but De La Rosa has already come out and said that his plans are not to go with Minardi. He's planning to try and find some other drive. So things looking good for the first round of the Formula One World Championship in Melbourne in March. We'll have an Australian team, although with a certain Italian flavour, which means that maybe down in Carlton they'll go wild.
Well, Minardi Formula One team could be heavily backed at starting the season in Melbourne in 4 weeks' time by a Spanish company that for many years sponsored motorbikes, and particularly McDoohan. the oil giant Repsol looked to be poised to become the major sponsor of the Italian-based Minardi team, which have had two Spanish drivers this season. The teenage rookie Fernando Alonso and Pedro de la Rosa, who has raced for Formula One for 2 years but had lost his place in the Arrows team to Brazilian newcomer Enrico Bernatoli. Stoddard, an aviation tycoon from Melbourne, now based in Europe, has, the irony of last year having an Australian driver in his team. But Webber, contracted to Benetton as a test driver this year, has seen the announcement this week that he's moving to Supernova.
That's right. And Mark Webber has signed, along with Brazilian Mario Haberfeld, to be the two-driver lineup for the FIA Formula 3000 Championship, driving for the Supernova team. Webber, who won the Silverstone Formula 3000 race last year with the European Arrows Junior team, will dovetail his racing with his role as Benetton's Formula 1 test driver. Haberfeld, meanwhile, has suffered two frustrating seasons in the category, and his 2000 season was interrupted by a leg injury sustained in qualifying at Barcelona. Team owner David Sears said it had taken the team a long time to make their decision, and he considered that with Mark Webber, he had a proven race winner and one of the title favourites. With Haberfeld, he had a very underrated Formula 3000 driver, although he knew his pedigree was up to scratch, as he'd been a Formula 3 championship winner in 1998. Webber finished third in last year's Formula 3000 title standings behind Bruno Jonquera and Nicholas Manassian, both of whom had drove for Sears last year and have since graduated to top Champ Car outfit Team Ganassi. So I'd say things are looking good for Mark Webber with Supernova.
Well, in-car tyre manufacturer Firestone is urging all Champ Car teams to closely monitor tyre wear and mileage in the wake of Gildy Ferran's testing accident at Homestead Miami Speedway on Wednesday. DeFerrin's Penske Reynard Honda slewed out of control, causing it to smack into the Turn 3 wall after its right rear tyre lost a portion of its tread. The Brazilian had run 57 laps, or 85.6 miles, on the same set of tyres before the crash, over Firestone's recommended limit of 70 miles. You'd be spewing if you only got 70 miles out of your road tyres, I'll tell you that. Anyway, they have gathered the information and looked at the tyres and at digital photographs and immediately went into conservation mode and urged teams to limit their runs to 40 laps, which is 60 miles, a spokesman for the company said. And whilst we have a look at US racing, Britain's James Weaver has won the pole for the Daytona 24-hour race, the Rolex 24 hours, for the fourth year in succession. The Dyson Riley and Scott driver leapt to the top of the time slot sheet after closing minutes of the first of two qualifying sessions with a time nearly 2 seconds clear of his nearest rival. The second grid slot was filled by a similar Robinson Racing Riley and Scott, driven by veteran Jack Baldwin. But don't forget, in that field, of course, are an American legend, Dale Earnhardt, the 7 times NASCAR Winston Cup champion, is sharing a C5R Corvette with his son Dale Jr. and an expat Brit, Andy Pilgrim. He took time out before the start of the Classic, and he said that the Intimidator certainly wasn't even at the sports cars. But the lone Ferrari in the field taking part in the event headed second qualifying, and it was looking quite good in that final session, and it was a rain-affected Friday 45-minute session that the Rizzi competition zone entry was running. And Ferrari, of course, one of the long-time favourites with the fans everywhere in the world, particularly for the Rolex 24-hour.
Well, returning to Formula One, and they've been testing in Barcelona. They've had 14 days of testing for Formula One at the Barcelona circuit, and at the end of the final day, which was yesterday, Saturday, it was Rubens Barrichello topping the times in a 2000 specification Ferrari. Ferrari's number two driver set a new lap record for the Catalan circuit, beating Jean Alesi's time set last week in a 2001 Prost by 0.3 of a second. Barrichello posted a time of 1 minute 18.60 seconds during the morning session and then proceeded to work on tyre and electronics developments for the rest of the day. Nick Heidfeld continued to shine for the Sauber team by taking second spot just over half a second behind Barrichello. The young German worked on the reliability of the all-new Sauber C20 and completed a mammoth 100 laps. Despite causing two of the day's three red flags, new arrow signing Enrico Bernoldi managed to go third fastest. Bernoldi, who was announced as the replacement for Pedro de la Rosa at the Layfield-based team last week, left the track twice in 2 hours at the Repsol curve due to driver error. Meanwhile, Jordan's Heinz-Harald Frentzen finished fourth as the German continued to improve the pace of the new EJ11. Although the speed of the 2001 car has improved in recent days, sources suggested the Silverstone-based team's 2001 Challenger is suffering from overheating problems, and engineers worked on the flow of air into the Honda V10 engine during the day. Baer's Honda's Olivier Panis switched to the 2001 Baer 003 on Saturday following the departure of Jacques Villeneuve. The Frenchman finished the day fifth after struggling with a setup which had been adjusted to his teammate. Baer test driver Darren Manning carried out gearbox work in the 2000 car and finished in eighth place. Benetton? Well, bad news there for their new man, Jenson Button. They finished at the bottom of the timesheets, but the team said that they were working on tyre development work for Michelin rather than trying to work on outright speed. Fisichella completed 29 laps, but the Italian's running was cut short by yet another failure of Renault's wide-angled engine. The team apparently knows what the problem is and is working to improve it. So, the teams are finished with their 14 days of testing at Barcelona, and next week, the cars will be heading to Valencia, Mugello, Estoril, and also the Kyalami circuit in South Africa to continue further testing.
Well, dual Bathurst winner Greg Murphy hasn't announced what he's doing V8 supercar-wise, although if you read any of the trade papers, they will tell you that it's Kmart Holden out of HRT. But he also will be running with the Bulls at the Qantas Australian Grand Prix in March. Murphy has scored the second wild card in the Shannon's Lamborghini Super Trophy at the Grand Prix. The other wild card is Australia's first 500cc motorcycle world champion, turned four-wheel racing star Wayne Gardner. Murphy, who won the Bathurst V8 Supercar Classic in 96 and 99, and Gardner's pole position qualifying last year, will be among 22 drivers in the Lamborghini Diablo GTRs, the racing derivative of the most powerful sports car ever produced. Lamborghini's House of Bulls is a famous Italian mark, and it's known because of its familiar logo. Has added 50 horsepower to the growling V12 cars since the Lambos last featured at the Grand Prix's Exotic International Sports Car category back in 1998.
And news in the European Touring Car Championship, which will be running in 2001, is that the Edinburgh Racing Team, which was going to be running in the British Touring Car Championship in the production class, has changed their plans and will now move to the FIA European Touring Car Championship. The move was planned due to the securing of extra sponsorship and support, which will allow them to race in the European Championship, which will be benefiting also from live Eurosport coverage. The Kent-based team, which won the 1996 British Formula 3 title with Olivia Gavin before going on to contest the FIA Formula 3000 series, will now campaign its E46-shaped BMW 320i's in the Super Production class rather than the BTCC's production category. The cars will be built by Italian BMW experts Team Raffinelli, and the engines will be prepared by Dutch Carly Motorsport. The team has signed 23-year-old Yorkshireman James Hansen, who has been running in the US Formula Ford 2000 season, winning the Road Atlanta round. So they'll be going up against former ETC champion Roberto Ravaglia, who'll be running his own team of BMW Super Production BMWs, up against people like ex-Formula 1 racer Morbidelli and Cox. So things looking interesting there. Teams sort of jumping around all over the place in touring cars in Europe.
Two events coming up next week, which we'll preview for you now. More than 400 competitors will take to the oceanside streets of Portland in Victoria's Western District for the fifth annual Kart Street Grand Prix on the weekend of February 10th and 11th. The 20 classes will take the weekend-long competition on Portland's challenging 660-metre temporary street circuit, which joins the foreshore with the city centre, in fact closing down the main highway, the Pacific Highway, through that area. Making guest appearance at the Portland Grand Prix will be V8 superstars Brad Jones. He will compete with his Oz Email, Falcon Racer and Transporter. Andrew Jones, Formula Ford, will also be on display, together with one of Prancing Horse's Ferrari 360 Modena Challenge GTP Nations Cup cars, and an ex-Michael Schumacher 1997 Ferrari F3 10B Formula One card, a sight and sound not to be missed. Of course, next weekend, Portland is always a fantastic event. And finally, don't forget, round two of the 2001 FIA World Rally Championship starts next Thursday, the 8th of February, going on through to the 11th. This is Inside Motorsport. After the break, we'll be back with Mark Zonneveld.
Inside Motorsport will return after these messages.
They'll be night racing this Thursday, and for your comfort and convenience, the following ACTABs will be open late. Erindale, Charnwood, Dixon, Western Canberra Centre, and the Canberra Racecourse Auditorium will be open until 10:45. Colleen will be open until 10 o'clock. Convenient betting with ACTABs, sponsors of Triple S.
Attention all runners, joggers and walkers, it's time to pick up your entries to take part in the 2001 New Balance Canberra Marathon weekend on the 7th and 8th of April. Entry forms available from the runner shop in Phillip must be in by March 16. The Canberra Marathon, fun for all.
Remember the feeling on that Friday night in September?
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Sydney 2000 Games. The
100,000 spectators, over 12,000 performers, 4 billion viewers worldwide. The Sydney 2000 Olympic opening ceremony was an unprecedented spectacle of enormous proportions, a spine-tingling event, something that all Australians should and can keep forever, because now the entire unedited Sydney 2000 Olympic opening ceremony is available on video for only $39.95 plus postage and handling. The Sydney 2000 Olympic opening ceremony on video. Call now.
Here's how to order. Call this number now. 1-800-00-1194. Write the number down. 1-800-00-1194. Call now. 1-800-00-1194.
Sponsors of Triple S.
Hi.
Good morning.
I need a clock that has more time.
More time?
My dad says he wishes he had more time with me.
Oh, well, maybe if you brought his watch in, I could squeeze just a few extra moments between, say, 3 and 5.
And I could put the 3 where the 11 is so I could get out of school sooner.
Will that be all?
I think so.
No, it'd be no trouble to bag up some minutes.
Family.
Well, didn't you ever hear your dad say, when I've got a few minutes?
Yeah.
Isn't it about time?
Well, now you can give him some.
From the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints.
Inside Motorsport, from the racetrack to your radio.
And of course the BOC Gas's Super Touring Cars and Future Touring Cars will be hitting the track next weekend at Oran Park. There will be the launch of the Mitsubishi Magna Future Tourer, which certainly will have a lot of interest on how that category will progress. But Colin Ford is joined now by Mark Zonneveld.
One driver who will be heading off to the next round of the BOC Gases at Oran Park, which is also the final round of the championship for the Super Tourers for the 2000-2001 season, is Canberra driver Mark Zonneveld, who's been driving the Ford Mondeo. Mark, obviously after you did not finish last time around with engine problems, you're hoping for a much better outing next time at Oran Park.
Yeah, definitely. We had a bit of an oil problem and spun a bearing at Wakefield Park. So the engine will be brand new for Oran Park, so they'll be able to put in plenty of practice beforehand and have a better run up there.
Mm. Now, have you run at Oran Park before?
Yeah, I have. I haven't actually raced at Oran Park for about 18 months, though, so it'll be good to get back there. It's a good, fun track and nice place to be.
Now, in the past, the Ford Mondeos have proven to be fairly competitive there at Oran Park, particularly the grunt they get out of that six-cylinder engine down the main straight.
Yeah, it's... Well, we're actually racing on the short circuit, so the corner at the end of the main straight is going to be pretty tough on the front wheel drive, but I think if the weather's pleasant enough, it'll be a competitive car to be running there next weekend.
Mm. Now, in terms of the championship, you've also driven the Peugeot earlier in the season. How would you compare the Peugeot to the Ford Mondeo?
The Peugeot is a lot more refined. It's probably more technical to drive. The Ford's pretty raw. It just comes on all the power, wheel spin, and it's a pretty hard, like very stiffly sprung car to drive, whereas a Peugeot is nice and smooth, and different tracks suit different cars better, but the Ford's definitely a competitive car, and that was one of the reasons I went to it.
Of course, you're running there with Peter Hills, who's been running a fairly strong championship last year and also this year.
Yeah, Peter's had plenty of time in the car. He really knows how the car works, and he's driving exceptionally well last year and this year, so I can hopefully draw on his experience at Oran Park to have a decent result, which I haven't had yet this year.
When you head up to Oran Park next weekend, who do you think will be the main people you'll be battling with within the field there?
The battle for me next weekend, I'd like to be up with Owen Kelly and obviously Hendo and Peter Hills, but realistically I think probably with Dave Auger, maybe Jim Cornish if Jim's ready to go again next weekend. So hopefully somewhere in the top five or six would be realistic for me.
And do you have any plans for the coming season, the 2001-2002 season with the Super Tourist Future Tourers at all?
Well, we're having a look at a few different things as well for, like, obviously the off-season. But as yet, there's nothing set in concrete, unfortunately. But I'm definitely looking around.
Right. And no doubt you're getting some good feedback from your sponsors, A to Z Home Improvement and the like?
Yeah, A to Z were pretty happy with the coverage they got from Wakefield Park around here in Canberra especially, and also at Pivotec and Osmo Transport, which is a new guy who's come on to help me out for this year and next. So he was really happy with the coverage we got.
Yeah. Well, Mark, hopefully a better outing for you the next weekend at Oran Park, and we'll keep our fingers crossed you don't end up with any further engine troubles.
No, that'd be great. If there's no trouble, I'm pretty confident of putting in a reasonable show.
Yeah. Mark Zonneville, thanks for your time.
Thank you very much.
One man who's looking to make the change from the Formula Holdens to the V8 supercars and, of course, in the Konica series is Dale Breeden. Dale, how much of a change has it been for you to get out of the Formula Holden and then into the V8 supercar, which you will be driving this season?
Mate, it's been a considerable change. I mean, the cars are two totally different things to drive. Formula Holden is obviously wings and slicks and that sort of thing, whereas the V8 supercar is no wings, more horsepower, heavier and a bigger vehicle. Performance-wise, like comparatively, they're pretty much the same. Like they sort of go as hard as each other and that sort of thing. But you know, they're totally different cars to drive, so you need a totally different driving style.
Well, you're in with NRC again this year, who you drove Formula Holdens for last year, and one thing about Arthur Abrams is he's a very, very fastidious engineer, isn't he?
Well, yeah, the whole operation is 100% professional. The engineers that he has, Matt Boniface, Mark Geyer, these guys are experienced engineers in their field, so the operation is second to none, really.
And already, for a Konica series, it seems like it is stepping up to a new level because you've tested at Wakefield Park and Phillip Island only last week.
Yeah, we tested at Wakefield Park before the start of the season, Phillip Island on Wednesday and Thursday. I don't know how many other guys are testing, to be honest, Craig, but we're trying to do as much as we can. Well, obviously restricted to the days you can do, but we're doing as many days as we can to try and get the experience in the car, but things are going pretty good so far.
It is an interesting series, the Konica series, because although it had been called V8 Lights, there was nothing light about the cars.
No, the cars are identical in specification to a Shell series car. That's why they renamed them Konica series cars, because at the end of the day, as you say, there's nothing light about them. They've got the same horsepower, same gearboxes, same diff ratios. Everything's identical. There's no difference. And next year, you know, we're running a VT Commodore. There's going to be VT Commodores and AUs in the series, so it'll be sort of you know, up to current spec type V8 supercar stuff.
Last week at Phillip Island, how were your times comparatively to other V8 Konica cars that have gone there?
Well, without giving too much away, mate, but I think for the Konica series we're looking extremely good. But we're aiming to step up to the Shell series the year after next. So more importantly, we're trying to reflect our times more closely to Shell series times. And even then, we're we were competitive, so I think things are shaping up reasonably well at the moment.
Now, you've managed to keep your a couple of your sponsors from your Formula Holden days in Asanda and, of course, National Capital Motors.
Mm-hmm.
That obviously is getting you part the way there, but obviously the sponsor chase still continues.
Well, at the end of the day, I mean, the team, being NRC Racing, are trying to secure more sponsorship so that they can grow as a motorsport type company. I've brought some of our existing sponsors along, but it's now up to the team to try and find the rest of the funds, I suppose. But we're all working hard together. I mean, I've got a very good, close working relationship with Arthur Abrahams, and it's good to be in that position. So we're all working together to try and get as much money together so that we can go racing in 2002 in the Shell Series.
Well, Dale, it's not very far away now from Wakefield Park, and from all reports, the number of the Konica cars that are out there, there could even be pre-qualifying involved for the Konica Series.
Yeah, well, I think they've got 30 cars registered so far. I don't know the grid capacity of Wakefield Park, but from what everyone's saying, there could be pre-qualifying, but hopefully we won't have to worry about that.
Mm-hmm. Well, Dale, we wish you all the best, and for all the Canberra fans that are heading up to Wakefield, they will certainly have one fella to cheer along.
Thanks very much for all your help, and it's been great working with the people from Canberra because they're always great supporters of us, and hopefully we can give them something to cheer about at Wakefield Park. But I'd like to, and anyone coming up to Canberra from Canberra, please don't hesitate to come up and say good day. I'd love to say good day to you.
Yeah, Dale Breed joining us on the line as he gets set for Wakefield Park in the first round of the Konica Series. Well, a man who's making his way back from a fairly exciting night's racing, or two nights racing, in fact, from Parramatta City Raceway is Oval Express's editor-in-chief, John Evans. And John, the $50,000 shootout is always a cutthroat affair. On top of that, it is really the last chance you get to see the top Australians and top Americans still in the country.
That's correct, Craig. It really was an exciting two-night event. The first night was plagued by the threat of weather, but unlike last year's event, which was washed out, on the second night they managed to get through, and American Donnie Schatz won the $50,000.
It is a very tough two-night racing because in sprint car parlays, it is a sheep station they are racing for.
Well, that's quite correct. It's probably the fourth or fifth highest prize money first place event in the world in terms of sprint car racing, and you wouldn't think of many other motorsport events in Australia which have a similar prize money structure. It does, however, fall away a little bit after you get back through third, fourth, fifth place, etc. And last night that was really the battle that was being fought, because Skip Jackson finished second, but the dice for third was just brilliant between Robbie Farr, Max Dumsney, the D-Main winner, Danny Smith, was a story in himself too, coming through the D, the C, the B, and then from the back of the A right through to up to seventh place at one stage. And of course we saw the first appearance this season of national champion Gary Brazier and his Mopar Maxim, and that also saw him run through the alphabet. Unfortunately, he hooked a rut in the A feature and flipped really heavily and damaged that car pretty much very badly for this weekend's coming Australian Championship in Brisbane.
Now, Brooke Tatnall, the World Series champion and four times champion, in fact, had his share of problems on Friday night.
Well, Friday was, because of the rain, Craig, it was a very heavy track. The format that they were running is that the faster cars would have to come through from midfield. The first three home in each heat would qualify for feature. Unfortunately for Brookie, timed that badly. He was behind the invert and couldn't make that transfer into the feature. From there, he was always struggling, and he'd only just pulled up into a transfer position in the B feature last night when he just spun on his own and threw away a qualifying position for the feature. So not a very good night indeed for the four-time World Series champion.
And as you said before, all the Australian competitors are now heading up to Queensland for the Australian Sprint Car Championship, and our visitors, unfortunately, not eligible to run there, heading back for what is going to be a very competitive World of Outlaws Series.
That's true, a very contentious that the American visitors are welcome here any other time but for one race, that most of them have obligations and commitments. I think there were 6 Americans running last night, and virtually all of them are heading home to race at Florida next weekend. But the Australian title will be a very wide open port affair. Both Brooks Hatnell and Skip Jackson still eagerly seeking their first Australian title.
And of course, one man who was out here this weekend was, of course, Brad Doty, a major part of the TNN coverage of the World of Outlaws, and once again returning to Australia, which he enjoyed last season.
Yeah, it's just fabulous to see someone of the stature of Brad Doty in Australia. Intelligent, articulate, always easy to get on with the fans, and he's a very, very popular addition, and he naturally enjoys his time down under.
Well, on the shelves now is the latest edition of Oval Express, and once again covering the full gamut of Speedway in Australia.
Yes, our February issue of Oval Express is on the stands right now. The cover story is Kerry Madsen. We also have a feature on American Chad Kavanagh, who performed really well at the Classic last weekend. There's an article about Robert and Colin Farr's mother, Robin, and also a great technical story about Stephen Graham's stealth Gertie Midget.
Well, it's been a pleasure to catch up with you once again, John, and well, we look forward to, of course, the Australian Sprint Car Championship, and of course then followed fairly close behind by the Australian Speed Car Championship.
That's correct. Thanks very much for your time, Craig.
John Evans joining us on the line from Oval Express magazine, where of course all the Speedway news around Australia and around the world is of course in the pages. But Colin, one Speedway that is world famous of course is the Daytona International Motor Speedway, and this week, as we mentioned, it is playing host to the Rolex 24-hour race.
And that's right, and after 8 of the 24 hours of the Rolex 24 hours at Daytona, it's been a race that's been developing into a three-way battle for victory. A number of drivers have found that this year the conditions which have been damp on the track have been causing a number of problems, particularly tyre problems, and in some cases the old problem of windscreens fogging up and also sticking windshield wipers. So things happening over there in Daytona for the 2001 Rolex 24 hours. But as it is at the 10 p.m. mark Saturday in US time, it was the Riley and Scott Mark III Ford of James Weaver, who was the pole sitter, who has a healthy advantage over the second place Ferrari 333 SP of Alan McNish, running for the Risi competition team. That apparently lost a right front wheel at top speed on the Daytona backstretch just before 10 p.m. As it is, third place is held down by the second of the Dyson team cars running the Ford Riley and Scotts, and that car is doing quite well there. Kelly Collins continues to lead the GTS class in the number 2 Corvette Racing Chevrolet Corvette C5R by 3 laps over the number 24 Marcos Mantara. Dale Earnhardt Sr. is in third place driving the number 3 Corvette, who was slowed during the 9th to 10th hour with a damaged wheel. In Sports Racer Prototype 2, number 22 Archangel Motorsport Lola Nissan of Andrew Davis, Jeff Clinton, Mike Duran and Tony Dudek now leads the number 62 Mazda Kudzu of Rich Grupp, Dennis Spencer and Ryan Hampton. The number 22 car is 12th overall. The Kudzu is 25th overall in a class which has seen much of the field fall by the wayside with mechanical problems. Sounds like a class you'd stay clear of. The number 31 White Lightning Racing Porsche 911 GT3R of Lucas Lehr continues to lead the GT class by one lap over the number 54 Jet Motorsports BMW M3 with Boris Seid, Tony Borchella, Hans Stuck and Tony Jennings at the wheel. They are 9th overall, one lap and one position behind the class leaders. The AGT class leader is the number 11 Chevrolet Camaro driven by Kenny Bupp, Doug Mills, Dick Greer and Simon Gregg. They are 37th overall, 5 positions and 7 laps ahead of the number 44 Team Amick Chevrolet Corvette of David Amick, Joe Varde, Bill Lester and Lyndon Amick. So, as always, the Daytona 24 hours over there causing some fun and games for all the teams.
After the break, we'll be back with Branners from Motorsport News.
Inside Motorsport will return after these messages.
Hello everyone, H.G. Nelson here, and I'm an amnesty freak. Roy, what is amnesty?
Amnesty International, H.G.
tremendous people. I would regard them as the global defender of human rights. And they're having this campaign, an international campaign that's called Take a Step to Stamp Out Torture.
Beauty.
Yes. And Australians can get involved. We can
How?
All get involved, HG.
How?
By calling 1-300-300-920. Amnesty International. Think torture. Think of getting rid of it. 1-300-300-920.
They'll be night racing this Thursday, and for your comfort and convenience, the following ACTABs will be open late. Erindale, Charnwood, Dixon, Western Canberra Centre, and the Canberra Racecourse Auditorium will be open until 10:45. Killeen will be open until 10 o'clock. Convenient betting with ACTAB, sponsors of Triple S.
Can you get good legal information without seeing a solicitor? Yes, by getting an Aussie Legal Information Kit. Will it cost you a lot of money? No. Aussie Legal Information Kits are only $49.95 plus postage and handling. Aussie Legal is Australia's up-to-date online information and law firm referral service. Aussie Legal's information kits cover over 100 areas of the law and are written in everyday language by experienced lawyers. Whether it's a personal injury matter, workplace issue, criminal matters, or just about anything at all, call now for an Aussie Legal information kit. From small legal questions to big legal issues, your first step is an Aussie Legal information kit. Quick, easy, and affordable legal information for everyday Australians. Order now, and you'll also receive a free internet download of any other Aussie Legal Info Kit.
Here's how to order. Call this number now, 1-800-00-1194. Write the number down, 1-800-00-1194. Call now, 1-800-00-1194.
Sponsors of Triple S.
It's coming up to that time of year again when Triple S previews the Braidwood Cup. Join Captain Jim and his mate for a delicious breakfast, 7 a.m. at the Royal Mail Hotel in Braidwood on Wednesday the 7th of February. There'll be fun giveaways as well as chats with the locals in the know. So get up early, bring an appetite and mingle with the crowds at the Royal Mail Hotel in Braidwood at Triple S's Breakfast with the Stars.
Dad, where are you going?
I'm going to play golf.
Why?
Because I like to play golf.
Why?
Because I get to walk around chasing a little ball.
Why?
Usually because I hit the ball into the rough.
Why?
Because the club face has opened up too much.
Why, Dad?
You know, I think I should just quit.
But why?
Well, maybe we could do something.
When?
How about now?
Family, isn't it about time? From the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints.
Inside Motorsport, from the racetrack to your radio.
Of course, the last issue of Motorsport News is now on the newsstands, and we talked to the editor of that August magazine, Phil Bragan. Phil, you've got an interesting cover, this one. You've got Sold on Murph and Larry's New Look. Boy, you're really getting it in there.
Well, it looks like the Kmart matter has been resolved in favour of Greg Murphy, who's apparently maintained favour with the huge retailer and is taking the money off to Holden Racing Team, and they're talking about a two-car team. All will be revealed on Tuesday in Melbourne when HRT has their series launch, but or their season launch, but that's the way things are looking at the moment.
Mm. Of course, Greg Murphy is a person who was somewhat cheesed off with the way that he'd been handled by Gibson Motorsport, so for him to sort of end up sitting under Holden Racing Team as a satellite team with the Kmart backing must take a bit of a load off his shoulders.
It does, but in hindsight, I guess there was always a chance that would happen. The Kmart have made a significant investment in the Gibson setup with Greg Murphy and Stephen Richards to, I believe, the extent that they actually had point-of-sale material done for the 2001 season. So to salvage some of that, I guess they decided to stick with Murph, and you know, why not? I mean, he's a great driver. He's won Bathurst a couple of times last time I looked, and he's a very competitive guy. And HRT are one of the few outfits in the country with the base that allows them to run probably effectively two-car teams.
Mm. Now, of course, the interesting part of this is that in all the merry-go-round, the fellow who's come up with a certain smile on his face is one of your columnists, Neil Crompton, who's ended up joining Craig Lowndes with the new Gibson Ford team.
Yeah, there was a bit of a what's going to happen to Cromley question earlier in the season. There was discussions he had very closely with Prancing Horse about maybe doing something touring car racing or V8 supercar related in the future, and doing some Nations Cup in the interim. And he's landed on his feet. Of course, he has a history with Gibson Motorsport. He's very well regarded, he's got an excellent public profile, and Craig Lowndes points out that, look, his Bathurst record is a tremendous endurance driver, and that's what the team's looking for. So It's not a bad situation, is it, Colin? They've got the best sprint driver in the country and one of the best endurance drivers.
Well, that's it. They've probably got the best of both worlds, as they say. Now, the other thing that's on your front page is Larry's new look, which is, I call it, Larry Perkins does the Italian job.
Red, white and green, we shouldn't be that surprised. I suppose Castrol have had those colours since, I don't know, what, 1926 or something like that?
Way, way back before my time.
Yeah, just before you and I were born. We shouldn't be that surprised, but it is a new look. The interesting part is that both cars will be identical. Well, you can't say both cars will be identical. The cars will be identical. And car 8 and car 11 will look very similar through the course of the season, so I wouldn't be surprised though if they occasionally do a special paint job for Ingalls' car. And I tell you what, he's very pumped up. He reckons he's going to win the championship this year. And you know, when you get Russell Ingall in one of those moods, he's a bit hard to argue with.
He's been a little bit quiet over the break between Bathurst and now, but no doubt as the season draws closer, we'll probably start hearing a few things from the enforcer.
Well, it's been a funny off season. We've all been talking about Craig Lowndes and Stephen Richards and what's going to happen with Crompton and who's going to go where and yada da da da. Jason Bright's gone to a Holden Racing team, and Russell Ingall and Paul Radisich have been sitting there going dum 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 dum, dum, dum. And if these two guys fought out the 2001 Shell Championship Series, would you be surprised?
And don't forget Tander and Barguana from Gary Rogers Motorsport training the equation probably as well.
Exactly, and they're going to have brand new cars. LP and the Enforcer are going to have brand new cars. Pick and winner, it's pretty hard, isn't it? It's theoretically, you could name eight drivers, and you could argue that each of those eight drivers is going to win the championship.
Now, the other interesting story that you've got up the front of the magazine, of course, is Paul Stoddart, the European Aviation Racing Team boss, with his purchase of Minardi.
Well, there are some awfully big numbers being thrown around, whether it's $70 million or $80 million or $91 million. I think it comes down to exchange rates. Anyway, the upshot is that Stoddart is a very enthusiastic Formula One fan. He virtually owned a Formula One team without a Formula One franchise before. I'm reliably informed by people that have seen his operation that what he bought from the Tyrrell turns into BAR shenanigans a few years ago is already four times bigger than everything Minardi owned in Faenza in Italy, and of course now he owns that as well. He has his own half-scale wind tunnel, which puts him 2 years ahead of Jordan and Jag. So I'm thinking that Minardi's not going to be a bad place to be in the next couple of years. He's a very enthusiastic team owner. He's got great plans for the team, and he's not saying, like a few team owners have said, hey, we're going to go out and this is going to be our year. He's saying, first of all, we're going to get into the midfield, and then we're going to get into the top six, and then maybe we'll think about getting on the podium. And he's very clever. He didn't go out and make all that money in aviation all at once. He did it step by step, and I think that's a great work ethic to follow in Formula One.
Well, that's right. One of those things, if you look at what he's done, what he started out with when he first started his business some years ago, it was a couple of leftover BAC-111s from the Royal Australian Air Force VIP squadron, plus all their spares, and he's now turned into probably what is one of the biggest charter firms in terms of aircraft operating in Europe.
That's amazing, isn't it? Stoddy bought those planes, and it was the spares that came with the planes that made him gave him the opportunity to make some sort of fortune, and he's kept following that through. Of course, if you buy a couple of XRAAF planes, that doesn't mean you're going to be rich. You've got to take your opportunities. He saw the marketing opportunities in private charter predominantly in Europe, which is now a very big business in the USA as well. And Stoddy's just made it all happen. And he's a great Australian story. He's from Melbourne, of course, the best people in motor racing are. He's from the northern suburbs. He was a car salesman, and now he owns a Formula One team. How good is this?
I suppose it's one of those stories, isn't it? Yeah, from used car salesman to Formula One team owner. I wonder if it sounds something like Bernie Ecclestone was. Yeah, but and this is the thing. It's one of those stories where the fanatic, as he might be, is now the team owner. And of course, we look forward to the fact that we're going to have an Australian-owned Formula One team on the grid in Melbourne in a few weeks' time.
Fantastic. Of course, the big question is, there's been no announcement about engines. They expect to run what will be badged as sort of, I think it's going to be a European Fondmetal type engine, which is a revamped Ford Cosworth. It isn't necessarily a bad thing. It's better than what Arrows have got. And the $64,000 question is, who's going to drive? It looks like maybe the next great thing out of Europe, Fernando Alonso, will have a steer, the Spanish driver, and maybe Pedro de la Rosa. But does Pedro want to go up against the next bright, fast, young thing from Spain and suddenly become Spain's number two Formula One driver?
Mm.
Wait and see.
We shall see. Now, of course, it is the time of year when there are 101, or it seems like it, Formula One teams doing their launches of their 2001 cars. We've got Ferrari with their F2001, Sauber with the C20, the Bar 003, the FW23. They're popping out all over the woodwork, aren't they?
Well, it's interesting from our point of view that last year we had big launches from Jaguar and BAR, and this year we've had small launches from everyone. McLaren's still to launch. They do their thing in about 10 days' time. Benetton doing their thing in Venice next week, so that's in the next issue of Motorsport News. But this year, low-key seems to be the flavour of the month. Instead of getting out there and saying, yeah, we're going to give everyone a good case of whoop-ass on the racetrack, they're saying, well, you know, this is a year for consolidation. And the other big news, since our issue came out, of course, is that at Fiorano, Michael Schumacher had his first run in the new F2001 Ferrari and broke the lap record first time out. Boy, how often does that happen at Fiorano?
I think that there's somebody from Ferrari who's probably saying, quick, let me find as many lira as I can to lay down with the local tab man and get my bets in now.
Or maybe they just Xeroxed a press release from 1977 when Niki Lauda would have gone out and broken the Fiorano lap record on the first day of testing. It's tradition. It's not a bad way to start your defence, and it's going to be a great season.
Mm. Now, of course, other interesting items you've got in this last issue of Motorsport News. You got an interview with Eddie Jordan, an interview with that man Brad Jones, and you just keep on coming up with these good interviews.
Well, Bradley's an interesting case in point. He's been so successful in everything else he's done, whether it's been Oscar, NASCAR, production car, or Super Touring. Of course, we won a couple of championships with Audi. He's had to really eat humble pie in his first season of Audi supercar racing, and it's been a very steep learning curve for him and the Aussie Male team, and he and his brother Kim have been very upfront and said, hey, we've got our butts kicked, basically, but we're not in the getting our butts kicked business. We're in the butt-kicking business, and we're going to fight back. And he's got the support of Ford and Aussie Male and his various sponsors like Kendall. So I think Brad's going to have a better season, but don't bet on him to win a race. I don't think that's going to happen.
Unless, of course, it's one of those reverse grid races, and he finishes from the back, and he starts from the front and opens all doors, front and rear, and keeps everybody behind him.
Well, he tried that in your part of the world, and it didn't work in the GMC 400. He had the golden opportunity and it couldn't make it stick, so we'll wait and see. But that's one of the things that's going to happen for them this season. They're a very good team. They're very good at calling pit stops and pit windows and all those sorts of things. And with the format this year, that might be right up their alley.
Mm. And of course, as well, you've got your report from Wakefield Park, where Paul Morris's unbeaten win in the BOC Gasless Championship came to a screaming end, of course, where Jim Cornish popped up to put his hand up to be the winner.
That's right. I was talking to some people overseas, and they said, I suppose Morris won two races again. I said, no, guess who won? And they went through about six names before they got to Cornish, and then it was, you're kidding, not taking anything away from Team Project Racing and not taking anything away from Jim Cornish and his Honda, but it was really a case of sticking in there and running down the leaders. He timed it perfectly, and he fully deserved to win the race. And Paul Morris is human. He didn't clean sweep the season. And in a way, it's kind of a shame, but it also means that next week at Oran Park, he'll be really pumped up and trying to take two poles and two wins.
Mm. And of course, probably at that particular race meeting, we'll see a few more people pop out of the woodwork, the usual people who appear when the series runs in Sydney to add a bit more flavour to the event.
Well, we were supposed to see at Wakefield Park the first appearance of the Mitsubishi Magna Future Tourer and the first appearance of the first Falcon AU's Future Tourer, now both due at Oran Park. Ironically, in the last race for Future Tourers, next season they'll be called Toka Tourers, and we've also got the story of what changes will be made in the new regulations.
Mm. So that's going to make it interesting there, because they actually had the last coverage of the BOC Gasless Super Tourer Championship and the Future Tourers on Channel 7 yesterday, and they did go quite into depth about the changes being made, particularly the part about Toka carrying the spares for the vehicle so that people don't have to carry large amounts of spares from track to track.
Well, it's all designed to do two things. Number one, it give competitors less of a choice as far as their control components is concerned, and number two, Toka rightly figures that making an investment in a new race car is a big enough investment by itself. So you don't have to carry an inventory of spares. If you've got a VT Commodore, a VX Commodore, a Falcon or a Mitsubishi, it's probably not a bad idea to carry some body panels. And I can see people going out there, and also things like Saabs and Volvos are eligible. But if you need suspension components or foot boxes or gear levers or things like that, Toke is going to carry an inventory of spares, and it's going to save you an awful lot of money at start-up time. It's going to put you on the track sooner, and it's going to encourage drivers to say, hang on, this isn't a bad idea. We can go and build ourselves an Alpha 166 or something like that for $100,000 and go racing without carrying a huge stock of spares. What a great idea.
And the other beautiful part of it is that everybody will be running basically similar components in terms of the gearbox, suspension arms and so on, so it makes it so much easier to keep it under control.
Well, it's very much following the mould of other categories which have been successful, like NASCAR or V8 supercars. The big problem with Super Touring, of course, was not only that was there no real control components between the marques, but last year's Vauxhall was completely different to this year's Vauxhall, and next year's Vauxhall was different again. So every year you had to go out and buy yourself a new race car, and that's what killed it. This is the opposite.
Well, Phil Brannigan, thanks very much for joining us this week on Inside Motorsport, the latest issue of motorsport news out on the shelves currently. And of course, the important thing we should point out to people is the last chance to win a GP weekend with Mark Webber. Of course, he's just signed with Supernova.
It's been a big week for Mark Webber. It's going to get bigger. He's got the run into the season. Of course, it would be a great thing to spend a weekend with Mark Webber. I wish I could enter that competition, but unfortunately I'm not eligible. So one of these days I'll catch up with him. But yeah, what a great prize, and one of those things you just can't buy.
Phil Brannigan from Motorsport News, thanks for joining us this week.
Pleasure.
Thank you.
Coming up next, we look at American motor racing with WEGO's Inside Track host, Sean Wood.
Inside Motorsport will return after these messages.
Dad, where are you going?
I'm going to play golf.
Why?
Because I like to play golf.
Why?
Because I get to walk around chasing a little ball.
Why?
Usually because I hit the ball into the rough.
Why?
Because the club faces open up too much.
Why, Dad?
Yeah, I think I should just quit.
But why?
Well, maybe we could do something.
When?
How about now?
Family, isn't it about time? From the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints.
BBC Sports Roundup has moved again. Join us Sunday to Friday at 6:30 for a replay from overnight, and at 8:30 we cross direct to London for an update on sport from around the world. The new time for Sports Roundup is 6:30 and 8:30 Monday to Friday. Saturday, it's Football Extra from 6:30, followed by Sports Roundup at 6:45 to bring you up to speed with what happened while Australia slept. On Canberra's Good Sports, 103.9 Triple S FM.
Holly is an irrepressible 5-year-old triplet. What sets her apart is that she's blind, but that's never held her back. With the help of guide dog instructors, she's learned to touch, to feel and to listen. By the time she was 3, she could walk using a cane. You can help train other blind and vision impaired children by sending your donation today to the Guide Dogs, P.O. Box 107, Milsons Point, Sydney.
And down the road we go.
The 27th Olympiad were the best games ever. This amazing event may be over, but the memories will remain with us throughout our lives with the Olympic highlights, Sydney 2000. This official video record captures the magic moment that epitomised the spirit of the Olympics. Share the elation of winning gold, relive the disappointment and heartbreak that goes with not achieving your dream, and enjoy the exhilaration that unified Australia in this collector's edition special release video. The Olympic highlights, Sydney 2000, a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity to own a piece of our history. And it's yours for just $44.95 delivered to your door, or in 3 easy interest-free payments of $15 each. Olympic highlights, Sydney 2000.
To order, call National Direct now on 1-800-246-868. Write the number down, 1-800-246-868. Call now, 1-800-246-868.
Sponsors of Triple F.
Inside Motorsport, from the racetrack to your radio.
Welcome back to Inside Motorsport. Joining us on the line now from WEGO's Inside Track program is Sean Wooden. Sean, welcome to Australian Inside Motorsport.
Craig, thanks very much. It's a pleasure to be with you today.
Of course, motor racing in America is focusing in now on the Super Bowl. You've just got over the football Super Bowl, but the motor racing Super Bowl is, of course, the Daytona 500. And the 2 weeks leading up to that is a lot of exciting racing down there in and around Volusia County.
Yeah, that's absolutely correct. It's weird when you have a sport that actually starts with biggest race of the year as the season opener, of course, the Daytona 500, the stock car Super Bowl of all motorsports, basically, I guess, only second behind that, the Indianapolis 500. And the biggest question this year is, what are the Dodge people going to do? They've been running about a mile and a half to almost 2 miles per hour slower than the other three manufacturers, but, you know, Ray Evraham's a crafty veteran, and he might be telling the guys to maybe sandbag it a little bit, just keep the speeds down somewhat. But I think the folks want to keep their eye on Bill Elliott, because when you think about it, Craig, the Dodge and Tremper that they're driving this year is almost identical to the Ford Taurus. So Elliott, of all the Dodge drivers, is going to probably have the best feel for the car and the way the car handles because of the various similarities between those two cars. But as we saw back with the inaugural Brickyard where Indiana native Jeff Gordon won the race, if Austin Bill from Dawsonville were to pick up the checkered flag for the first time in 23 years for Dodge, I think they'd be tearing down Daytona Speedway.
It is an interesting coming home and probably the largest change on the motorsporting landscape for quite some time is Dodge's re-entry.
That is true. We had a chance to talk with Ray Evraham on the Lowe's Motor Speedway media tour that occurred a couple weeks ago, and just to see the cars and what he has accomplished. And I think the biggest accomplishment that he is looking forward to is this, as you walk into his shops, which are actually the old Bill Elliott shop, right in the middle of the trophy case, there's an empty spot, and that's reserved for the Winston Cup Championship trophy. So they are very much focused and very much set on capturing that trophy. If you recall the success that Evraham and Jeff Gordon had, and now with the likes of Casey Atwood, and you have Dave Blaney and Ward Burton in the Dodge mix, plus the Petty family as well, I really think the Dodges are definitely going to be cars to contend with, but I have to feel pretty strong that Bill Elliott's going to be the first Dodge driver to pick up a victory, only because he has the experience in the similarities between the Ford Taurus and in the Dodge Intrepid.
Mm-hmm. With the IRL and CART split up in the United States and on the motorsport landscape, that has really changed the focus of where the world center of motor racing is in the U.S., and now it'd be safe to say that really Charlotte is the home of motorsport in the United States.
I'd have to agree with you there on that one, Craig. As you and your wife, Heidi, have been here to the States and have seen what the how much Lowe's Motor Speedway has grown. You have to go back to a movie made by Burt Reynolds back in the early 70s. And in it, a lot of the later parts of the movie itself, the movie was called Stroker Ace, was shot at the Lowe's Motor Speedway, which was back then Charlotte Motor Speedway. And to see the amount of growth in this area, particularly with the Humphrey Wheeler's vision of connecting Highway 29, which runs right in front of the Speedway, to Interstate 85, which is the main highway here in North Carolina, that has all blossomed to the point now where they're just adding stores upon stores, and they're even building a NASCAR cafe, and that will be open to the general public in October of this year. And, of course, this year, too, they're pushing back the qualifying night for pole night for the Coca-Cola 600, the largest and longest race on the Winston Cup circuit, back to Thursday night. So you're right, the landscaping is changing somewhat with single day qualifying now, where teams really have to be on their best in order to make the field. But at the same time, you look at the county that we are in here, which is called Cabarrus County. It's one of the fastest growing economic counties in the entire Southeast United States, mainly in part because of motorsports. The economic boom, a study was done, and it has shown that annually there's over $420 million that is poured into this county just from motorsports, and that's from tourists, that's from race shops relocating here, and it's just going to continue to grow. There is really no stopping to what this county can do, and there's no stopping to what the folks at Lowe's Motor Speedway can do. They always come up with new and inventive ideas, and I don't think it's going to be too much longer before we start seeing more construction at Lowe's Motor Speedway, and some of the billboards between turns 3 and 4 eventually are going to turn into seats. Now, lately, they've had a problem with selling out the races, and last year they had a major problem where they had a race and the Carolina Panthers of the National Football League playing the game on the same, very same day, they asked that not to happen as one of the quirks in the schedules they just could not overcome. I'm sure they'll have that taken care of. But I think as time rolls on, and depending on what kind of coverage we're going to see from Fox and from NBC, I think you're going to see the stands at Lowe's Motor Speedway start to fill back up, and eventually not take anything away from Daytona, because Daytona is the true center of racing for NASCAR. I think the crown jewel eventually that's going to rise up out of everything is going to be Humpy Wheeler and his staff at Lowe's Motor Speedway.
It is interesting. Bruton Smith, over the last 12 months, has gone about not only setting the NASCAR world on its ear, but certainly the sprint car world with a number of facilities that he opened up. And, of course, lots of sprint cars have enjoyed some great dirt track racing in areas that are not familiar to sprint cars. The dirt modifieds are about to come down to Charlotte and give them a taste of northeastern racing.
Yeah, that's true. April the 7th will be the maiden voyage for the dirt modifieds. For those folks who may not know, DIRT is an acronym for Drivers Independence Racetracks. It was started by Glenn Donnelly some 26 years ago in an effort to get everybody on the same page, to keep the cars the same. You have to remember, these cars evolved out of the 30s and 40s, the Ford Coupes, the sedans, the Chevrolet cars as well, and now that has grown up into what we see presently on the modern-day DIRT modified circuit, and this is a circuit I'm quite familiar with, having grown up on it going back to 1972. It seems like a long time ago. I was just about 5 years old. I went to my first dirt modified race at the famed Flemington Fair Speedway in New Jersey, which is unfortunately has shut down for good right now. And that's another thing. They're going to bring in these dirt drivers, but yet at the same time, Craig, you're going to have drivers such as the likes of Jerry Nadeau, who's already purchased the car, Dave Blaney, and one other driver in the form of Tony Stewart. So you're going to have three NASCAR drivers in the mix of the field that night. Plus, it is a sanctioned race, so the top drivers are driving for points. So it's going to make it a little more interesting to see what these guys can do. Blaney, very talented in both the modified and the sprint car. Stewart can drive just about anything. I think if you put him in a tractor race, like a lawnmower tractor, he'd probably win. And Nadeau, I've never seen him run outside of the asphalt, so it'll be interesting. Plus, for me, it's a great night. The station's going to be broadcasting that race, plus one other race at the dirt track at Lowe's Motor Speedway this season. So that's a thrill for me. But, you know, we're going to start, not only are we going to see the dirt modifieds coming down, but there is talk inside of the folks at Lowe's Motor Speedway, possibly the USAC Midgets or USAC Silver Crown coming down here next year. So, as I said before, I really think with the vision that Humpy Wheeler and Bruton Smith have and what they've laid out in their plans, this is going to be eventually the capital of stock car racing.
And, Sean, I look forward to having the opportunity to have a chat to you, because once that motor racing season gets going, you don't get too many weekends off in between then and, of course, it wrapping up at Atlanta Speedway.
Yeah, that's very true. I think there's one weekend off for Easter, one weekend off for Mother's Day, and then there's one weekend off later on in the year. And there is talk of possibly going to 38 races next year, and maybe even having Bruton Smith's Texas Motor Speedway track picking up a second race. So it's going to get more and more interesting. But yet, you have to remember, Craig, years ago, drivers were running 60, 70 races a year, and you never heard them complain. But at the same time, they didn't have all the corporate sponsorship and or the commitments that they have to their corporate sponsors. So should be interesting to see what happens this season, as they'll be dropping the green flag a week from today with the running of the Busch Class in the course for the first time ever live, be the Twin 125 shown on television. So I think two main stories that the fans want to look for in the early part of the season for NASCAR. Number one, how do the Dodges do? What do they do in Daytona, and how do they come out of the box? And number two, the new television package between Fox and NBC, and see what they have to offer from those two networks.
Inside Motorsport will return after these messages.
They'll be night racing this Thursday, and for your comfort and convenience, the following ACTABs will be open late. Erindale, Charnwood, Dixon, Western Canberra Centre, and the Canberra Racecourse Auditorium will be open until 10:45. Killeen will be open until 10 o'clock. Convenient betting with ACTABs, sponsors of Triple S.
It's coming up to that time of year again when Triple S previews the Braidwood Cup. Join Captain Jim and his mates for a delicious breakfast. 7 a.m. at the Royal Mail Hotel in Braidwood on Wednesday the 7th of February. There'll be fun giveaways as well as chats with the locals in the know. So get up early, bring an appetite and mingle with the crowds at the Royal Mail Hotel in Braidwood at Triple S's Breakfast with the Stars.
Sure, you can whistle while you work. Or you can tune your radio off the music and onto a winner with 103.9 Triple S FM Racing.
They're off, Big Baron and Torvo fast away.
Inline Racing now on the Canberra Posting Cup.
In the straight, the first time under the winning post with three to go. $24,000, a big trifecta there.
Be a winner while you work on the National Racing and Sporting Service, 103.9 Triple S FM. Inside Motorsport, from the racetrack to your radio.
And joining us now is Mike Porter. Mike, things are certainly moving on in two of the big events that you handle. Of course, one of them being the Targa Tasmania. Of course, the news this week about the potential for running a special stage down there at Salamanca Place in Hobart.
Yeah, that's a new concept. They're trying to get the people of Hobart more involved and take the event, I guess, to the people a little bit more. If you look at the success of street events right around Australia, you know, we see one in Adelaide with V8 supercars, there's one in Canberra, Albert Park itself is situated in the city, the Gold Coast IndyCar Grand Prix, and Tommy Targa Tasmania goes all over Tasmania, so I guess it makes common sense to run a stage through the biggest city in the state, and also it showcases a very prominent part of Hobart.
That's right. If you look at where Salamanca Place is, it's probably one of the most attractive and historic parts of Hobart.
Yeah, it is, and that'll be good for television and tourism and all that sort of thing. So, and it opens the way for a lot of the event sponsors to get some good, really good corporate facilities for at least one day during the event for a particular stage. So it'll be kind of turned into a carnival, but, you know, there's still some procedures to go yet with CAMS and with council, but so far, a week after the announcement, all the response from the local residents has been very positive. There has been, you know, Octagon, the promoters, have been very thorough in their planning with things like traffic disruption and noise and you know, some of the environmental issues that get brought up from time to time in these matters. And, you know, as I say, the local population has been very supportive so far.
Mm. And of course, it looks as if it's going to be, once again, quite a quality entry into the Targa Tasmania.
It does. Tomorrow, actually, we've got a major announcement happening. But for sure, at this stage, Jim Richards is going to be back with Barry Oliver. And also, Neil Bates is driving a Works Lexus with Coral Taylor. At this stage, over the next few weeks, we'll probably be with some of the announcements to come. It looks like there'll be perhaps up to six or seven manufacturers involved compared to only, you know, one or two last year. So there's definitely been a growth in the quality of the field. And the entries will, again, be around about 300.
Mm. And it is an event which is getting such a huge attention from overseas as well.
Well, yeah, and that's why the Targa people and also the Tasmanian government's very keen to capitalise on some of the overseas media opportunities. You know, these type of events really can showcase the state. And I mean, I don't know if you saw any of the pictures from the recent Paris-Dakar rally, but I don't think they were necessarily trying to showcase the deft. But you know, the pictures were very spectacular, and you know, these type of events are made for that.
Mm. Now, the other major series that you cover for us, of course, is the BOC Gas's Australian Super Touring Championship. Now, they go down to their final round at Oran Park next weekend. And, of course, it's going to be a very interesting round. It's going to be the first one where we're hopefully going to see a couple of new cars debuting in the future tourer class, the Mitsubishi Magna and the AU Falcon.
Yes, well, the Magna has been built by Peter Muir and will be raced by Greg East. I'm not so sure about the AU Falcon. You must know more than me about that.
We've heard the word that if it's not racing, at least it'll be making an appearance somewhere around the track.
No worries. Okay, well, as I say, I don't think that one's been totally confirmed yet, but certainly having the Magna there is a very big step forward, because we have had EL Falcons in the championship. Kerry Wade's done a really good job. He won a race over at Malala, and unfortunately he was involved in a first lap collision with James Brock at Wakefield Park last weekend. But Kerry's done a really good job in the Fords, and certainly it'll be good to get more Fords out there. But I think having the Magna there is going to be, you know, as a third manufacturer or third make of car involved, is certainly going to create a lot of interest.
Mm.
But there's also, you know, some other interesting points too, like Jim Cornish, after his fantastic win, starting 13th on the grid at Wakefield Park. And he's had good car speed all year, just suffered from lack of reliability. So I think apart from Paul Morris, Jim's probably in as good a shape as anybody to go for the podium now against the likes of Owen Kelly and perhaps John Henderson. There's also an interesting battle left for second, third and fourth positions in the championship, because David Auger, for instance, who's third at the moment, he could in fact finish second if he has a great weekend and John Henderson has a bad weekend, or he could finish as low as fourth if he has a bad weekend and Peter Hills has a good weekend. So I think if David Auger was to finish in the top three in the championship, that would be a fantastic effort. You know, for a guy who this year has been so consistent, he's finished, I was looking at the statistics the other day, he's finished in the top 5 and 12 of the 15 races, and he's finished every one of them. So, you know, he would certainly deserve it. But equally so, John Henderson, you have to feel a little bit sorry for him last week at Wakefield. When Paul Morris dropped out, he was looking like he was going to be the guy and go for the win, but unfortunately John lost power steering in the car, and he's finished second to Paul Morris in so many races this year, and the one day that Paul had a problem, well, John unfortunately had a problem as well. So, but also at Wakefield Park, it was great to see Luke Searle get on the podium for the first time. Luke's always had to start from the back of the grid in races throughout his career, but at Wakefield Park, with qualifying on Friday, he was able to qualify, put the car third on the grid for both races, and had a very good first race and finished second, actually led until the last lap when he was passed by Jim Cornish, and was very competitive in race two. So I think there's better things to come from Luke Searle.
Mm. And the thing is too, this next meeting is on the short circuit at Oran Park, which has produced some really close and frenetic racing in the past, and I'd say that we'll have, you know, Paul Morris out there to try and show that what happened at Wakefield Park was a bit of an aberration to his normal faultless record. You'll have Owen Kelly out to prove a point, you'll have John Henderson out to prove a point, and Jim Cornish, as you say, backing up on what was a most incredible win last week in Wakefield Park, also out to prove a point. So I reckon it's going to be probably one of the most exciting race meetings we've seen for some time.
Yeah, I don't think people can be too critical of Paul Morris. It wasn't a mechanical problem and it wasn't a driver error. What happened was that Jason Domisench, who drives one of the VA Future Tourers, had an engine seizure and it dumped oil on the track, and there was Paul and about half a dozen other cars got on the scene very shortly afterwards, and all of them slipped off the track momentarily and got going again. But unfortunately, when Paul, he slipped off the track, and when he went to drive back on, he drove over a curb, and it dislodged the, or didn't completely dislodge it, but it loosened the front left wheel. So that was just a mishap. He went off the track through no fault of his own, and it happened to damage the car. So, you know, it wasn't like it was a mistake by the team or a mistake by the driver. So I think Paul will be pretty hard to beat again. But, you know, who knows? I mean, you know, that's why they go motor racing, because you just never know what's going to happen.
Mm. I think that'd probably be the most frustrating part for Paul, was the fact that the problem wasn't of his own making. It was something he just was happened to be, as it is, leader of the race, the first guy on the scene after somebody had had that incident with dropping the oil, and he suffered the consequences, unfortunately.
Well, if Paul Morris was frustrated, there's about 20 other blokes who'd be a lot more frustrated about how their seasons are going, I guess.
Yeah.
Paul's had a fantastic season. I mean, he's been fast, the car's been super reliable, he's driven within the limits, he hasn't put a foot wrong anywhere, hasn't been involved in any incidents, not that he's had cars in front of him too often, but, you know, he's been out there probably a bit like Mick Doohan used to be in the 500s, you know, you still got to keep the thing clean and keep the thing tidy, and he's done all of that, and they really do have a very good team and crew of guys working on that team, as do all the front runners, you know. Peter Hills' team, you know, they work off perhaps a smaller budget than a lot of the others, but they keep two cars running pretty competitively most of the time. I think Oran Park will be interesting, and certainly the scrap for second, third and fourth in the championship between David Auger, Peter Hills and John Henderson, that'll be you know, extremely interesting.
Mm. I think the interesting part as well will be how far up the field the future tourists can get, because as we saw in the second race at Wakefield Park, where you had Ray Sidebottom, I think it was, who finished fourth. So they're improving.
There's a lot of attrition, but certainly those guys, Ray and James Brock, who've got the VLs, the newer cars, they've been steadily improving all season. And, you know, as the championship comes to the close, they're probably sort of, they're in great shape for next season, those two guys, I think, because when everyone switches to new cars, they'll have sort of half a season or a season of development work with those cars behind them and a bit of experience. The other thing is Paul Morris went for a drive in Ray Sidebottom's car at Wakefield Park and helped him with the setup and whatever. And I think that showed, you know, Ray went, regardless of the fact that he finished fourth, a lot of super touring cars dropped out of that race, but, you know, Ray was certainly going quicker than he's gone at any time during the year. But another guy who made a big impression at Wakefield Park was Kyle Johnson, a young 18-year-old guy driving a 1993 Nissan. He qualified third and seventh for the two races in a car that's, you know, very much out of date. And in the first race, until he had gearbox problems, he was running right with Kelly and Searle, and I think he was running fifth for about the first five or six laps, and then he had a gearbox problem and had to stop. But he's just come like a bolt from nowhere, and he's obviously a real talent, Kyle Johnson. We're going to hear more about him.
Mm. Yeah, and certainly one of the young drivers that has certainly made his mark and who we'll look forward to seeing next week at Oran Park. Mike Porter, thanks for your time joining us this week on Inside Motorsport.
No problem. Thank you.
Thank you.
Inside Motorsport will return after these messages.
They'll be night racing this Thursday, and for your comfort and convenience, the following ACTABs will be open late. Erindale, Charnwood, Dixon, Western Canberra Centre, and the Canberra Racecourse Auditorium will be open until 10:45. Killeen will be open until 10 o'clock. Convenient betting with ACTABs, sponsors of Triple S.
The Churchill Trust is now calling for Australians from all walks of life to apply for the 2002 Churchill Fellowships. You could be going overseas in 2002 for about 4 to 10 weeks on a Churchill Fellowship that would cover fares, a living allowance and fees. No special qualifications are needed, as merit of the project and the benefit to Australia are significant factors. Look up the Churchill Trust on www.churchilltrust.org.au or call the Trust on 1800 777 231. Applications closed 28th of February 2001.
The 27th Olympiad were the best games ever. Now, you can have your own personal memento. The Olympic highlights, Sydney 2000. This official video record captures the magic moments that epitomise the spirit of the Olympics. Share the elation of winning gold. Relive the disappointment, the heartbreak that goes with not achieving your dream. Admire those who had the guts and determination just to be there. And enjoy the exhilaration that unified Australia in this collector's edition special release video. The Olympic highlights Sydney 2000. Yours for just $44.95 delivered to your door. Or in three easy interest-free payments of just $15 each. The Olympic highlights Sydney 2000. Just $44.95.
To order, call National Direct now on 1-800-246-868. Write the number down. 1-800-246-868. Call now. 1-800-246-868.
Sponsors of Triple S.
Inside Motorsport, from the racetrack to your radio.
And the winner of Race 1 at Wakefield Park last weekend, driving the Visit Your Vet Honda Accord, was Jim Cornish, and a man who's no doubt looking forward to the final round of the BAC Gasser Super Touring Championship now joins us on the line. Jim, no doubt you're all fired up after that race win and trying to go for maybe a round win next time at Oran Park?
Yeah, well, no, that's right, Colin. The whole team was on top of the world after Wakefield. We actually narrowly missed out on winning the entire round on points after we had a problem in race two, but we're really pleased with the car. It's taken us a long time. We've had a lot of mechanical problems during the year, but it's definitely on the pace at the moment.
Mm. Now, this, the second race at Wakefield Park, the car, I was there watching it go past and watched Nigel Barclay and the rest of the guys of the team, they're sort of like urging you on and you were sort of getting there, but then engine overheated, I believe a problem with the water pump.
That's right, yeah, on about lap 19, the warning lights came on for temperature and it went up to about 120, but I was sort of managing to keep it in the mid-teens. The guys noticed some smoke coming off the bottom of the car and had lost track of the laps and actually waved me in. So I came in on what was the last lap. If we just rolled over the line in the pits, we would have finished third, but We'd lost our radios. We had a few things go wrong in the closing stages of race two.
Mm. Now, the next race at Oran Park, it's on the short circuit. How have you gone there in the past?
Well, all my background in racing was street sedans and club cars, and being based in New South Wales, most of those races were at Oran Park. I actually equaled the lap record there in an RX3 back when I first started racing. So of all the tracks in Australia, it's probably the one I know the best, also the one I can probably set a car up for the best. So I think if I had to pick a track, it would be between Lakeside and Oran Park, where we'd have a hometown advantage.
Mm. So no doubt the team is planning to try and give you that little bit extra something and then try for another win.
Yeah, well, we've actually pulled the whole gearbox and engine out of the car. We've had gearbox problems all year. It's actually been dumping oil under the clutch, which has meant that off the line we've either had to burn the clutch out or just drive it away like a road car. And it worked quite well at Wakefield, but we can still get better starts than we've been having. So we're working on that, and also we've got a few new setups we want to try. So hopefully by the time qualifying rolls around on Saturday morning, we'll be up to pace. Normally we're still testing a few things in qualifying, but we're trying to make sure that that's not the case this round.
Mm. Now, of course, this final round, there's a few things going on ahead of you, which is where you likely could end up in some trouble there, is you've got John Henderson, David Auger and Peter Hills all fighting over second, third and fourth places outright in the championship. So they're all guys you're going to be up there fighting against as well.
Yeah, I think I actually wasn't aware of that because we've been having troubles. I haven't been following points for the championship overall. But racing's always close. The guys never give an inch, and I don't think any of that will really change. You know, we both raced, we've all raced together now for a number of years, and we know how each other drives. I think that there might be a bit more at stake, but the driving's always been on the edge, so it probably won't be any different to any other round.
Mm. Now, of course, no doubt Wakefield Park was a great reward for your sponsors who've stayed with you quite loyally over a couple of years.
They have. I mean, it's a unique program. In putting it together, it's a care-busy event program to promote preventative health care for, you know, so pets actually go to their vet before they get sick, so hopefully we can, you know, keep them healthy for longer. And the backers of that are Frontline, which is Flea and Tick Control, HeartGuard, which is the Heartworm and Hill Science Diet. And between the three of them, they've stuck with us now for probably 3 or 4 years. And they've, through the bad times when reliability hasn't been so good, so it's definitely a big payoff for them. We got a lot of coverage on Channel 7 and they were very happy.
Mm. Well, Jim, no doubt you're looking forward to the final round at Oran Park. We look forward to seeing you up there and hope to up the point in the field next weekend.
Great. Thanks very much, Colin.
Thank you very much, Jim Corn.
And joining us on the line now, the Australian Sprint Car Champion, Gary Brazier, and as you get set to defend that title in a very interesting combination, the only Mopar that's getting around this country anyway.
Yeah, you know, we're fortunate enough that we're the only one with the Mopar engine, and, you know, last year we bring it out and won the first time out and got the Mopar the Australian title.
You have had an interesting season. You've been racing predominantly up there in Queensland.
No, I've actually only done 4 shows this season, not counting this last night with the Gough and Gilmore race. But no, we only ran 4 shows just for John Kelly, just to basically help him out and get a couple of shows in.
The track up there, is the track you particularly like to drive?
Well, yeah, I mean, every track's a racetrack. Everyone's got the same racetrack to race on. So, you know, particularly I like Warrnambool and Parramatta Speedway in Adelaide. But Archfield's one of those tracks that can be lucky for the guys off the front row most of the time. Mm.
The $50,000 show that you ran last night, it sort of is a unique race for everyone in Australia because it's not too often you get to race for a decent purse.
Yes, no, it's, you know, once in a blue moon. It's great that Gough and Gilmore came aboard to the Sprint Car Racing and gave us that opportunity to run for $50,000. You know, Donnie Shops, the American, come over and stole the money. And, you know, what do you say about the Americans? They just got, they do it for a professional living. They race, you know, 4 to 5 times a week. And realistically, he should come over and beat us.
Yeah, but we get him in the end because then he has to change it back to US dollars and it's nowhere near as much.
No, it's nowhere near as much, but I'd like $25 in my pocket.
Of course. And, of course, the national title, you've kept an eye probably on how the World Series has gone this year to get an idea of who's going to be your closest competition.
Yeah, you know, everyone's sort of been racing all year long. Well, that's the only thing that's going to sort of hurt me a little bit because we've only basically done 4 shows and they've all done about 30 shows. So, but, you know, we've done a lot of laps last night at that Gough and Gilmore. We started out at the D Main and made it all the way through the A, and You know, basically we've just got to get our car right, and I don't really worry about what everyone else is doing, and I sort of still go there with the fact that they've got to beat me, not me beat them.
Well, we wish you all the best to defend your championship, and obviously it is going to be probably one of the tougher ones that you've had to go up for.
Yes, oh, it's definitely going to be one of the tougher ones, but, you know, at the end of the day, it's just another race, and as long as everyone comes out healthy and the fans get to see a great race, everyone wins.
Well, Gary, all the best for next weekend.
No worries, thanks for that.
Yes, and in Formula One news, the European Commission has ended its battle with Formula One, and essentially what has happened is the European Commission has signalled an end to its lengthy investigation into how motor racing is run. The Commission had objected to the close links between the FIA, Motorsport's governing body, and the Formula One Administration, the company which markets the rights to Formula One races. It had claimed that these and other issues to do with the organisation of motorsport contravened European Union competition guidelines. The EC believes that the FIA had the power to prevent competition by threatening to withdraw the licences of track owners, teams and drivers. But EC Competition Commissioner Mario Monti said on Friday that changes to the marketing and broadcasting arrangements surrounding motorsport seem to us to amount in principle to a satisfactory solution. An EC statement added that in the light of this progress towards the resolution of a long-running and difficult case, and as all complaints have now been settled, the Commission is in a position to give its preliminary approval to the modified rules and arrangements. The EC's decision had been expected for some months, and it amounts to a huge coup for FIA President Max Mosley, who had been working to resolve the dispute for more than 4 years. The negotiations between the FIA and the EC had been characterised by often ill-tempered series of broadsides between the two bodies. So what it now means is that things are now in place for Bernie Ecclestone to handle things as he's seen in the past.
Yes, the more things change, the less they do. But the American Speed Association is opening at the Florida Half Mile St. Augustine Speedway, and that becomes the 15th track to host an opening event in its 34th season of racing. The fourth time in the last 6 years, the Sunshine State of Florida will see ASA Racing competition kick off, with the ASARacing.com 300 taking the green flag on Saturday the 17th of February, the night before the Daytona 500 at St. Augustine Speedway. The event marks the start of the second campaign for the highly successful GM Vortex ASA 570 engines and the BF Goodrich Traction TA tyres. It also begins Gary Sanamont's quest in defence of his 2000 ASA National Championship.
And talking of Minardi earlier in the evening, ex-Minardi man is going to be running two Alfa Romeo 156s in the European Touring Car Championship. Luigi Di Lorenzi, who has left the Grand Prix team at the end of the last season, will oversee two X-Works Super Tourers which will run in the ETC's amateur division under the GDL Racing banner. Lead driver will be Di Lorenzi's son Gianluca, who showed good form in the Works Alfa squad Nordotto last season. The identity of his teammate has not yet been decided. I'd say it could be James Thompson, who's now looking for a drive since Honda's left the BTCC, and he's missed out on the Audi drive in the DTM.
Yes, and going over the United States, the IHRA season is once again on TNN, the national network, formerly the Nashville Network, but the president, Bill Bader, has announced that the International Hot Rod Association has selected the Diamond P production group to produce television programming and coverage for the 2001 Summit Drag Racing Series. The Clearwater, Florida-based Diamond P will produce 12 IHRA shows for broadcast in prime time Sunday nights on the national network. The IHRA is in its second of a multi-year agreement with TNN, and Diamond P's mission is to create the most entertaining show in drag racing for the IHRA, stated Bader. The Georgia Organa and the Diamond P team are committed to producing cutting-edge entertainment that appeals to the traditional drag racing audience whilst allowing the IHRA to create new fans. Make no mistake, the IHRA is in the entertainment business, and Diamond P is a company to take the IHRA's television show to the next level. I just hope it doesn't turn into a WWF-type program. But whilst we're on the IHRA, well, three-time NHRA Top fuel world champion Shirley Muldowney will compete at two IHRA Summit Drag Racing Series events in 2001. Muldowney will contest the AC Delco Nationals presented by Chevrolet at Virginia Motorsport Park on April 20th and 22nd, and the Mopar Parts Canadian Nationals at Grand Bend Motorplex in Ontario on June the 1st and 3rd. Shirley's appearance at the AC Delco Nationals marks the team's first ever appearance at the Virginia track. The runner-up to Clay Milliken in the inaugural Moparts Canadian Nationals last June, Muldowney thrilled fans with her first 300-mile-per-hour pass in a top fuel Canadian drag racing history, and it set the top speed of the event in the first round of eliminations, get this, 310.13 miles per hour. In addition to the Virginia and Grand Bend races, Muldowney and crew chief Ron Tobler have booked a series of match race dates, including Darlington International Dragway on the 29th of June and Cordova Dragway Park on August 25th.
Yes, and Subaru have found the source of their problems from the Rally Monte Carlo, the problems that put both of their cars out. They've found a faulty batch of ignition coils, so they're going back to that subcontractor, and I think they'll get belted mightily around the ear by Mr. Lapworth and Mr. Richards of ProDrive.
Yeah, they certainly won't be hoping that will plague them coming up this Thursday, February the 8th, when it all kicks off. And next week on the show we'll be looking at Portland, the street kart racing, and also we will certainly be getting you all the news from what will be the start, the morning of the final round of this round number two of the Swedish Rally.
And, of course, we'll be covering the final round of the 2000-2001 series of the BAC Gasser Super Tourers and Future Tourers from Oran Park.
Coming up next, of course, is Around the Bases, but until next week, thanks for joining us once again here on Inside Motorsport.
Inside Motorsport is produced by Thunder Media in the studios of Triple S FM Canberra via Comrade Sat with the support of the Community Broadcasting Association of Australia.